Hello and welcome to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we take a closer look at healthcare technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. I'm Ron Southwick, lead editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. In this episode, we talk with Dr. Hamid Husseini, the Chief Medical Officer of Point Click Care. He talks about the way artificial intelligence is being utilized in emergency medicine, how AI can help clinicians and patients, and how eventually he says AI is going to be part of the care team. It's a very interesting conversation. Thanks for joining us. This is Databook. Thanks for joining us. We are talking today with Dr. Hamid Husseini, the Chief Medical Officer of Point Click Care. Doctor, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Ron.
Okay. Let's just talk a little bit about your background. You're an emergency physician, but you've made the switch to take the role at Point Click Care. Just talk about your journey.
Yeah, so I knew early on when I was in my residency at the University of Mississippi, pursuing emergency medicine, that something was different, right? There was this process-oriented sort of brain space that I had that some of my colleagues didn't. So a lot of times I heard things, I would ask questions like why we are doing something, and it was largely met with answers like, well, that's just how we've always done it. And so I always struggled and enjoy I always struggled with a lot of those process-oriented sort of inefficiencies, if you will, and the inability to fix those. And so as I continued my practice over about 10 years, I dipped my toe in several different areas, including on the payer side, as well as doing some sort of startups and whatnot. But really, at the end of the day, the idea of changing the macro view of healthcare has been really important to me and something that I've really strived. And so I landed here at Point Click Care after several years of doing some consulting and leading as the chief medical officer here. And it's been a great transition.
Well, there's so much talk about AI in healthcare, but especially in emergency medicine. I'm just really curious as to hear your perspective on how AI could be utilized and is maybe starting to change emergency medicine.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we, emergency medicine is like a lot of processes in medicine, outside of medicine for that matter. There's a process. A patient comes to the hospital, a review of their history is occurs, determination of what the next most important, potentially emergent, workup or treatment occurs, and then where do you send that patient? And so, and along the way, how do you communicate with that patient? How do you convey the information that you're obtaining and the diagnosis effectively with the patient and their family? And so, I don't want to simplify it too much to say, hey, that's just all it is, wash, rinse, repeat. But the reality is oftentimes that is. And so, the opportunity to remove barriers to improve inefficiencies across that process for the clinical staff is the cool thing is that we've been working on it for a long time, and AI has the opportunity to accelerate it even faster.
And you're talking about removing inefficiencies. That's often talked about in context of using AI to streamline administrative tasks, maybe helping summarize patient records more quickly. Are you talking about steps like that, or are you maybe talking about something a little bit bigger?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think when we start thinking about the process of like making sure the right patients are at the right place at the right time, like that's the sort of the pre-hospital triage opportunity that exists. Because if you go back and you look at the macro level or the population view of an emergency department, think of how many patients get placed in the wrong location, or they get admitted to the wrong floor, or they are potentially even present to the wrong hospital based on resources. So that's one potential opportunity along the process. And then you brought up documentation and or interpretation of medical records and what have you. I mean, I think about that being the most obvious example here, right? Like the days of my father's a retired neurologist. I would go into his office and see charts that were, multiple inches thick, and think to myself, how could one person go through that in a reasonable time frame? And then we fast forward to electronic health records, and they serve a great purpose. But the reality about an electronic health record, it's a place to store everything. And when you store everything, unfortunately, it's very difficult to create a narrative that is effectively managed. And so how can we take all that data, create a narrative? And I think I used to take credit for the statement, but I think it was Colin Powell that said, in technology, we're looking for solutions that solve between 40 and 80% of the problems and provide that kind of information. Because if it's 100%, it's too clunky and too detail oriented. So effectively, what we're talking about here is taking a lot of information and boiling it down to the most important information that's actionable and delivered at the right time when we're caring for patients. So that's on the front end, and there's other opportunity as well in that process.
You talked about something interesting, especially like in hospital systems where maybe a patient's maybe treated at one hospital, maybe a smaller hospital, and it's determined they need like more care, so they go to a larger facility. But sometimes not necessarily sent to the right floor, even though necessarily the right facility. So is that a situation that happens from time to time? How common of occurrence is that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot more common than the general public thinks, right? Where because we're so dependent on humans, we're so dependent on the title of a charge nurse or a doctor or a transfer coordinator. And the reality is that there's differences in output of these individuals. And so the reality is depending on communication ability, depending on information provided, depending on resources at both locations, I think this is happening a lot more, and we're seeing it a lot more than one could appreciate. And so, but this just doesn't happen from hospital to hospital. When we think about skilled nursing facility to hospital, the ambulatory areas of our practice to the hospital or vice versa. The reality is there's so much inefficiency when we're trying to transport an effective story or an effective narrative about a patient to go receive care at a different location because that's what they need. And so opportunities to be able to streamline that, to be able to automate that, and ultimately to be able to elevate to the point where we've got some logic that's being able to help us to navigate this in a different way.
I was thinking also too about like the importance of maybe reducing unnecessary tests, especially in an emergency department environment that's so busy, and you're seeing just such unbelievable volumes. I can't imagine how being not a physician myself, can't imagine having to manage that environment, especially if you're juggling multiple patients at a time, as any emergency physician probably is. How important is it to try and maybe use some of these tools to maybe identify the right test, and also maybe not spend time on tests that may not be necessary or applicable to that patient's needs?
I think you're hitting like one of the biggest nails on the head, Ron. Like the reality is that we have a situation in the emergency department where a lot of times there's more patients than we can effectively tolerate. It's almost we're almost in a situation where because they don't come in at, they don't have appointments, for example. They don't come in, at three patients per hour for 72 patients a day. They come in 12 this hour, 5 this hour, 10 this hour. And so the reality is that a lot of times we're sort of trying to utilize what we have available to care for as many people as we have. When we talk about testing, a lot of times people don't get really excited about, well, you ordered a few too many blood tests, or you ordered a few too many urine tests. But when you start thinking about, especially imaging, you can take one clinician that's ordering a CAT scan on 50% of his or her patients, and someone who's ordering a CAT scan on 10% of his or her patients. The reality is the CAT scan is going to add about 75 to 90 minutes of time to that ER visit, whether that's an admission or discharge. And so obviously if a patient needs it, we're going to order it. But if we knew that a patient had one done yesterday, being able to effectively get that report or recognize that it was negative and that the need to repeat that was probably minimal. The fact is that if we can work to minimize that, we're going to see shorter wait times, we're going to see faster admission times, and ultimately those are metrics that are driven by increased morbidity and mortality. So that's good for the overall population, patients that pursue care in the emergency department.
It also seems, especially in an ER setting, so important to be able to surface the relevant insights of a patient's record quickly, so that you can see stuff right away, or even throughout the hospital. So, like you said, like you mentioned, like, oh, they had a CAT scan done yesterday, we don't need to order another, or things like that. So, because there's a lot of information in patient records, especially if you're trying to deal with by necessity quickly, it's not always easy to surface the information a physician might need right away.
Yeah, Ron, it's really funny. I every day, every week, I feel like this is a very underappreciated aspect of healthcare. My sweet mother was telling me about her primary care physician and some frustration she was having about him not knowing about her recent hospitalization. And he's like, she goes, can't he just look in the computer and find this? I don't understand why he doesn't know about this. And I go, Mother, relax, first of all. Second of all, I mean, the reality is that, you could go to the warehouse that Starbucks has and wherever they have their warehouses, and you could probably find your medium roast and your oat milk and your cup and your top, and you could probably brew your own cup of coffee. And the reality is you could, but we go through the drive-through for efficiency. We go through the drive-through so we can get it and get on with our life. And the reality is our lives are centered around consuming information as clinicians to be able to provide the best care for the people that we're serving. And so this is just another example of how we can improve efficiency through automation and also AI to be able to better take care of patients real time.
And also to be fair to mom, you can understand the patient's perspective. Like, but seriously, it's got to be in the computer, right? And it's like, why? Because like, for a patient who doesn't understand just the massive information a physician might be dealing with, you can understand where that friction comes. Plus, patient. I mean, when I'm a patient, I'm sure as heck not at my best either. So you can see how that creates a little bit of friction that makes it harder for the physician who's trying to do their best for the patient too.
Absolutely. Love you, Mom, if you're listening.
You shout out to mom for sure, absolutely. And you've already talked about this too, but also just talk more about the care transition, because that's where whether it's maybe going from one hospital to another, or maybe a hospital to post-acute facility or ambulatory facility, things like that. That's where sometimes things can go a little bit awry if, like, not all the information is handed over properly, and that feels like that's an area where there can be more hiccups than maybe the public realizes.
Yeah, I think that the reality here is that is I'll say two things. One is that there's opportunities here to really decrease the workload, make clinicians' lives better in this realm. Absolutely. As a clinician, one of the things that gives me the most heartache is when I'm working a night shift, for example, and a patient needs a follow-up with a specialist or a clinician that I don't have direct access to. And I share with them, I say, hey, sir or ma'am, tomorrow you need to call this office and get an appointment for sometime in the next week for them to check your leg or check your heart or what have you. I walk back to my desk and I have the utmost concern that that's not going to happen. There's going to be a barrier. There's going to be a hurdle. There's going to be an inefficiency that creates that from not happening. And it almost keeps me up at night a lot of times when I have a number of these. And so how can we better guarantee that that happens? There's no 100% guarantee, but how can we get better through technology and automation to be able to guarantee and effectively that that happens and allow us to provide better care, more guaranteed care, and patients don't come back and go, well, you told me this and it wasn't possible. And so I think this is a real opportunity to really break down those inefficiencies and transitions between clinicians, between clinical settings, even between social resources. I mean, again, in the same conversation, having a conversation around transportation or pharmacy delivery, and knowing I'm not talking to that person. I don't know for sure, but I'm hoping and trusting the system. And unfortunately, the system sort of fails you often.
This is sort of a broader AI question. It might even be more for down the road, but just would love, especially from your perspective as a physician and as an emergency physician, obviously AI is going to start getting used more as a tool for decision-making support for physicians. Are there any concerns that doctors down the road might become overly reliant on AI decision-making support tools? Because especially in a busy ER setting, I can see, not even intentionally, but it'd be very easy if you're under the gun, a doctor to kind of rely a little bit on the AI tools. Do you have any concern of that nature, even if that's something that's a little bit down the road at this point?
Yeah, I think I would sort of put on alert my fellow clinicians to say this. When we decided to go to medical school, Being a critical thinker was of the utmost importance. And the reality is, in the last 15 years of practice, I started practice in 2008. The reality is that there's become more and more, dare I call it, cookbook medicine type protocols and initiatives that have been delivered, whether it's corporately or whether it's through a professional organization. And it's most likely research backed. But the reality is that we can't order these tests for this presentation, walk away, and assume that every one of those patients gets admitted to this unit and gets this care. We have to be thoughtful. And the same thing's going to happen with AI, right? We're going to have great insight into some things that we didn't have before. There's going to be some recommendations to do something that after years of practice, maybe that's not the best route to go, and it might be a landmine. But the reality is, I think it's going to be a great asset for the critical thinker and one that wants to be open to the use of a new tool.
And now I took the Debbie Downer approach, but at the same time, the one thing that AI seems really promising for is like just helping doctors keep up with all the changes in medicine. Because I mean, medicine is just advancing so rapidly. So AI tools seem to offer a real opportunity for doctors to maybe keep up to date on, new advances, new studies that would be very tough to do, that are very tough to do now. But maybe AI offers some chance to help doctors on that score.
Absolutely. I mean, the reality is if you're working full time as a clinician, I personally attend a few courses a year. I listen to a podcast on my way home, on my way to the hospital to try to advance my education. I occasionally will read an article if it comes across my feed that's just sort of monumental and life-changing and transforming of a practice. But the reality is, like, if I boil all that over into a year and I go, well, basically, I'm going to do about 50 to 75 hours a year of continuing education. The reality is when you're doing something like emergency medicine, for example, that has to touch every aspect of healthcare, you can't possibly learn what you need to. And so, having a tool that's able to consume that information, deliver it in an actionable form, and to be able to make allow it to affect how patients are treated and worked up, and really just to challenge the status quo. That's what science is all about. That's what healthcare is all about when we talk about taking care of patients. We haven't always treated sepsis the way we've treated sepsis. If we go back 100 years and go, well, we're going to keep treating it the same way and not innovate, then really we haven't we're not really buying into science, and that's what we do. And so AI is, I think, science just like anything else, and being able to provide input and improve care, quicker care, faster care, and more complete care potentially is a tool that we all should be embracing.
I did want to ask about some of the work that Point Click Care is doing with MassHealth, Massachusetts Medicaid program. I know you've been working with them to help patients needing psychiatric treatment get in the right place more efficiently. Could you talk about that and how that work is going?
Yeah, I mean, the work is going great. I think the outcomes, I don't have any hard data to share with you just at this moment, but the subjective feedback that I'm hearing from clinicians and leaders, it's very positive. Again, it goes back to process, right? I mean, I think the general public, or just the public, think that, like, if a patient's having a mental health crisis, they go to the hospital, they get admitted to the hospital, right? Or they get admitted to a behavioral health unit. But there's so many steps along the way. There's an evaluation in the emergency department. Even before that, there's a how do we transmit the data to the behavioral health units to make sure that's the most appropriate behavioral health unit? How do we get those patients transferred? And so, as what we're finding is, we're just cutting off time on every level across that process. And also, what we haven't been able to really articulate yet, and I think time will show, is how many patients are getting to the right place versus before having patients get to one place and realizing it was the wrong place to have to be sent back to an emergency department. And so, all that to say, I think it's just the tip of the iceberg from a destination management and destination transition, transition of location. It's just the tip of the iceberg of how we're going to, in the future, be able to more precisely and more efficiently get patients from point A to point B in their crisis, regardless of its mental health or other physical ailments. So it's been a great partnership so far, and we've I think subjectively we've seen a lot of excitement about it.
Just wanted to ask one other broader question about AI, because as it's getting incorporated more and more, do you see AI eventually becoming part of the care team, or are we at that point now, or is that something that may be coming down the road?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it's semantics, but the reality is it's hard to argue that, right? I mean, just something as simple as ambient listening technology and documentation. I mean, if 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we instituted scribes, for example, in the emergency department to help take my notes when I'm trying to see patients at a more quicker, rapid rate, and to not miss any anything in translation. Well, I mean, those were people. They were part of the care team. And so being able to institute processes, AI tools to alleviate and obviate lengthy processes and incomplete processes, absolutely. These are going to become tools that I think 10 to 12, 15 years from now, we're going to go, how did we ever live without that tool? And because the demands are getting higher, the costs are getting higher, and the workforce isn't growing at the same rate as the demand. And so we have to get smarter and not just think of this as a nice to have, but I think in time we're going to see that it's actually a necessity and part of what we consider our care team.
Did want to ask one last question. So our window is really coming to a close, and this time is really flown. I've really enjoyed the conversation. Just was wondering if you've had a chance to see any of the HBO series The Pitt, about emergency medicine in a Pittsburgh hospital. Have you seen any of The Pitt?
Absolutely. I've watched the full first series. It's unfortunately it's incredibly realistic, right? That's sort of my party line there. Great acting, but the reality is those are the inefficiencies, those are the hurdles, those are the barriers that we deal with every day as clinicians. Those are the issues that patients deal with when they come to seek care, and they're told that either we don't have it, or it's unavailable, or it's whatever the story is. And the reality is that people are very dynamic. And I think what the my favorite part of the show is that it just highlights the how dynamic people are. It's not just about their physical ailment, it's about their social situation, even the staff in the hospital, understanding that a nurse is not a nurse is not a nurse, a doc is not a doc is not a doc. They have lives, they have families, they have emotions, they have mental health themselves. And so it's a great show. Love it. Really highlighting the emergency department in a way that is honest and truthful.
I was wondering if it met the standards of realism from having somebody who's actually been an emergency physician. So it sounds like it is.
Indeed.
I know we got to wrap up. Maybe just on that note, one final note just about emergency medicine in general. Is there any, having been there, having done that, is there advice you'd love to share maybe with hospitals and health systems to help take care of their emergency physicians and nurses for that matter?
Yeah, I think for a long time, and I think it's changing, but I think for a long time, emergency medicine, physicians, nurses, the department itself was almost a necessary evil, right? And I don't say that pejoratively. I'm just saying it was a place that all hospitals had to have, and it really wasn't a place of significant investment. And I think what we're seeing now more and more is that this is the front door of the hospital. 30, 40 years ago, there was a lot of direct admissions and a lot of admissions to a hospital through an alternate route. And now it's estimated that almost 90% of all admissions come through the emergency department. And so the reality is that this is where we deal with the adults. This is where we deal with the kids. This is where we deal with the OB emergencies and delivering of kids. This is where we deal with the social issues and the medical issues. And the reality is it's not easy work. Love on your staff. Let them know they're appreciated. And when they bring you some concerns, that listen, I'm not saying act, but listen and provide them the technology and the tools necessary to be successful. It will do you and your community exceptional things.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Doctor, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
Absolutely, Ron. Have a great rest of your week.
Thanks for listening to Databook, a podcast from Chief Healthcare Executive. You can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. For the latest news, in-depth analysis, and deeper dives on the big issues in the world of healthcare, visit chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and X. I'm Ron Southwick. Thanks for joining us. Take care.